Vaccine injuries are now out in the open. Can you believe it? We're about to get to this thing called common knowledge. Hi, everybody. Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity here. Common knowledge is when everybody knows that everybody knows something. You and I can know something together. In fact, everybody listening to this can know something, but it's private knowledge until somebody yells it out and performs that role of the child in The Emperor Has No Clothes when the child shouts out, hey, he's naked, and then everybody knows that everybody knows the same thing, then it becomes what's called common knowledge. So the common knowledge game is afoot, and I've always said that things change very rapidly once you get to common knowledge. So we're tracking that common knowledge game at Peak Prosperity all the time. It's really important. These vaccine injuries are now out in the open, and it's not just the internet saying that anymore. For those who need their stuff coming from a central approved source, this would be the source we're going to discuss today, which is this New York Times article saying thousands believe COVID vaccines harm them. Is anyone listening? Oh, what an interesting framing on this. I'm going to tear this article apart because thousands, how about millions? Not believe, but we've got all the proof anybody could ever want. Hello, everyone. I am Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity. And my question for you is making sense of the global scene a challenge for you? Are you too busy, maybe, to keep up with all the updates? Well, I have some good news. I offer 120 scouting reports every year to my subscribers, just like the one in this very clip. Save time, stay sharp, all for less than a dollar a day. So look, this is by, this was a front page article by Apurva Mandavili. I have not ever really forgiven her for such all-star classics as this. Remember Apurva back in the day saying someday we will stop talking about the lab leak theory and maybe even admit its racist roots, but alas, that day is not yet here. Yeah, Apurva, that's what it was. Racist to believe that the PRRA furin cleavage site and the restriction sites sprinkled along in a no-see-em sort of a pathway, highly suggestive of racism. Or it could be lab creation. Of course, that's what we always knew it was. So at any rate, Apurva has been absolutely running interference for the machine, for the COVID machine, for the pharma companies the whole way through, and really no different here. This is from a May 3rd article. She writes here, within minutes of getting the J&J COVID-19 vaccine, Michelle Zimmerman felt pain racing from her left arm up to her ear, down her fingertips, goes on to recount this poor woman's experience with that. It's terrible. But why the J&J? Now, J&J is one that, of course, isn't one of the mRNA vaccines, and I'm not even sure that the J&J was supposed to get approved. This was an adenovirus vector vaccine, and this is something that, of course, they're going to do everything they can to frame the vaccine injuries around the J&J vaccine, when in fact, most of the case reports that are sitting out there right now pertain to the most commonly delivered mRNA vaccines, those are the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine. So, of course, you would count on Apurva to start out with a J&J anecdote, knowing most people aren't going to get much past the top 5 or 6 paragraphs or something like that. But look at that. It's right there in the first sentence. One, within minutes of getting the 5 words in, J&J, right? There we're there. So that is part of the fixing. This is a fixer article. This is a trickle truth. This is starting to leak out the idea that, oh, maybe there are such things as vaccine injuries, but let's pin it on the J&J vaccine, which, by the way, kind of interesting that it's in the same adenovirus vector vaccine class is the AstraZeneca vaccine. Christine Anderson, the MP there out of the EU, writing, quietly and secretly, the EU stops approval for AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine. But, of course, the billions have already been earned. The scam has driven through the streets and Big Pharma is finally satiated. So today they revoked approval of Vaxzevria 5 weeks ago. And so there it is. Commission implementing decision, withdrawing the marketing authorization granted by decision. This one here. Or Vaxzevria, so that's gone. So now we're seeing that, okay, there's a hit out on these two adenovirus vaccines, but why just them? Well, let's carry on. Let's go back to this article really quickly. So as we go down into this, we come on down, Dr. Zimmerman's, you know, harrowing thing. Her life really got upended, like everybody who's been truly vaccine injured, regardless of which type of vaccine. It's pretty bad. And so then you see the first part of just damage control here, which is, well, here we've got a quote from Jeff Nesbitt, a spokesman for the Department of HHS, in an emailed statement said, hundreds of millions of people in the United States have safely received COVID vaccines under the most intense safety monitoring in U.S. history. Okay, that right there is a whole bunch of propaganda. That's a lot of propaganda because, first off, we've had the least aggressive safety monitoring ever in history. We have this thing called the VAERS system, which everybody tells you, and you'll even see it later in this article. They'll tell you flat out the VAERS system is really not fit for purpose. It's a terrible system. Like, it just anybody can just log anything in and nobody really follows up. So we don't really know what it says. Well, then why do we have such a stupid system then? Why don't we have somebody following up? Why don't we make it a robust system? Why, if that's a bad one, what's the better one that we're managing to put into place? Of course, they put in this other thing called vSafe, which allowed people to, you know, hand enter stuff in on their phones. And unfortunately, that pre-selected just a small range of things that you could select as a side effect and didn't have the full length of things. Because if you looked at the complete side effect list of things that could have happened because of the vaccines, it's like 291 separate things. It's like a big old laundry list of ailments, many of them related to neurological conditions, immunological dysregulation, of course, being some of the worst, and the heart conditions, the myo and the pericarditis that we're familiar with at this point. So at any rate, that's an assertion, and it has two separate lies baked into it, right? First, that hundreds of millions of people have safely received the COVID vaccines, okay? It doesn't, whether or not that's true, it leaves aside the people who were injured, who did not get it safely, okay? It, like, if you said, if I gave this to the whole world and I said billions have gotten this vaccine safely, but 1 billion of them were deeply, deeply injured, that's still technically true, but it's kind of a lie by omission. So that's lie one. Lie two is the most intense safety monitoring in U.S. history, because I can tell you about case after case after case after case where people have submitted what they thought was a very solid, verifiable, temporally associated case of vaccine injury, and nobody followed up. Nobody called them. Nobody was interested in what happened. In fact, you'll hear that story over and over again. And then here too, we are in CYA mode by all these people who were up to their eyeballs and were responsible and not only dropped the ball, but absolutely blocked any efforts to try to get to the truth or to get any exposure on this idea that there is such a thing as a vaccine injury coming off of these poorly tested, quickly rushed through development vaccines that we've got. In this next line, look at this, but in a recent interview, Dr. Janet Woodcock, a longtime leader of the FDA, who retired in February, just recently said she believed that some recipients had experienced uncommon but serious and life-changing reactions beyond those described by federal agencies. I feel bad for those people, said Dr. Woodcock, who became the FDA's acting commissioner in January 2021 as the vaccines were rolling out. I believe their suffering should be acknowledged, that they have real problems and they should be taken seriously. Really, Janet, you were in charge of the agency that could have done something about this. You had resources at your disposal, billions. You had thousands of people working there who you could have said, let's do this. Let's look at these things. Let's be serious about this. Let's gather the data. And you didn't do that. In fact, you blocked efforts to do that. And now we're supposed to imagine that Apoorva Mandavili comes out and says, oh, well, you know, let's just take a statement. What? Oh, Janet, you feel bad for those people? Oh, yeah, that makes you a humane individual. No, this is image repair, PR damage control 101, trickle truthing, trying to get this out there and maintain something of a semblance of being able to go out in public and think I'm still a good person. Sorry, Janet, you lost that. It's you don't get to think that about yourself anymore. You're not one of you should look at that old comedy routine. Janet, are we the baddies? Yeah, you are. By the way, this is fascinating. Let's go back up to the top. It says here, Apoorva Mandavili spent more than a year talking to dozens of experts in vaccine science, policymakers, and people who've said they've experienced serious side effects. More than a year. Gee, New York Times, thanks for the urgency on this one. People's lives are being injured and damaged, and these very vaccines are being promoted and pushed on a vaccine schedule for infants down to 6 months of age, where nobody can actually articulate a cost benefit analysis, particularly in the Omicron era, where Omicron is, people widely recognize now, the most common effect of Omicron is a runny nose. And still, you would risk maybe blocking or limiting the length of that runny nose duration in a child against a serious and life-altering injury. That is not something that can ever be possibly, logically, rationally, or humanely recommended. It just can't be done. There is not a single case you can make that at scale across a broad range of otherwise healthy children that we should be giving these things. But it shouldn't also take a year to write this article. I think this article should take about a couple of weeks of talking to people. But if you had a year, you could also talk to people who understand the science behind what's actually happening. We have the IgG for class switching of antibodies, particularly on subsequent boosters, particularly on boosters 3 and 4. We have really serious safety signals showing up neurologically, immunologically, with respect to cancers, which is a subset, I believe, of the immunological dysregulation, of all kinds of things going on for people that are quite bad. And you could have talked to some of those experts, but they did not. Janet Woodcock carried on. "I'm disappointed in myself," she added. Janet, I wouldn't be disappointed in myself if I had done what you had done here. I would be considering seppuku at this stage. She added, "I did a lot of things I feel very good about, but this is one of the few things I feel I just didn't bring it home." Okay, Janet, how many things do you think you had to do as the FDA, Food and Drug Administrator, where your prime job is to make sure that drugs that come out are safe and effective? You know, there's a lot of things I feel like I did really well. I feel like I redecorated my office really well. I ran really good meetings. I gave great performance reviews to everybody. I was very good at going out and giving talks to groups that weren't going to challenge me in any way. I feel really good about that. But one of the few things, yeah, injecting hundreds of millions of people with something that turned out not to really be all that safe. That was, just put that in the loss column, but mostly I got a lot of W's. Crazy how these people think, or that they think that this is just going to skip on by. But reading the comments in the New York Times, you will be surprised to find out that this really plays with the deluded audience that exists over at the New York Times. I am so sorry for all you New York Times readers who used to be thinking that this was a quality publication, a newspaper of record that was somehow did its best, even though it might make mistakes now and then, to carry the truth, to really explore something deeply, to have great editorial controls. All the people who are reading this now and feeling good about what they're reading in this really got some major mind-bending damage done to them because they're unable to connect dots and understand what really happened here. This was a classic mind F, big time, and it's really damaged a lot of people. But you know who got damaged the most? Those who are most highly educated or consider themselves intelligent. Of course, these are the people who would rail against the toothless MAGAs and all that other stuff, because at least they're not ignorant like them. So they can't bring themselves psychologically to confront the idea that they were the ignorant ones. They got sold some snake oil in this story, and it's absolutely true. What happened? Okay, carrying on. Going on to blame the fact that, you know, what we need more big government because it was really the fragmented healthcare system that complicated detection. No, you know what it was? It was that nobody was interested in gathering the data. Step one, don't gather the data. Step two, claim no data exists for the thing other people are trying to claim. There were lots of people gathering data. They gathered it anecdotes, but of course, observational medicine is really important and it works really well. For observational medicine, you very simply observe that when you give somebody something in within 24 hours, they suffer a serious complication, maybe death, that might be a connected event. And we had tons of evidence. We even had evidence in the clinical trials for the Pfizer shots directly that there were problems there in those first trials. The data was all there. All right. So the blah, blah, blah. blah, blah, blah. Nice picture of an arm there. So how about this? Patients who believe they experience serious side effects, reading in this article, quoting from it, say they have received a little support or acknowledgement. True. Sean Barkovich, 54, a nurse practitioner in New York City who has worked on clinical trials for HIV and COVID, said that ever since his first shot, merely standing up sent his heart racing, a symptom suggestive of POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which it is not suggestive of it. That's kind of the definition of POTS, when you stand up and your heart gets racing. A neurological disorder that some studies have linked to both COVID, much less often to vaccination. Yeah, you got the wrong studies in here, Apurva. I would think after a year, you could have actually found out that those studies that linked it to COVID were from the earlier versions of COVID that no longer exist. They have not been circulating for years. If you look at more recent studies, you are far more likely to get POTS from a COVID update or booster than from currently circulating COVID. This is simple deductive logic. This is the kind of stuff we used to be able to manage 5-10 years ago. This is what science used to be able to do. We used to be able to understand what the nuances were, and this isn't a nuance, right? We don't have no such thing as COVID. We had different variants. Delta was a very different beast from Alpha, which is a very different beast from any of the Omicron strains, right? Full stop. That's easy. This is easy. This is easy. But suddenly it's hard, you know? He also experienced stinging in his pain in his eyes, mouth, and genitals, which is abated, and tinnitus, which is not. And I can't get the government to help me, he says. Fruitless pleas to federal agencies and elected representatives. I'm told I'm not real. I'm told I'm rare. I'm told I'm a coincidence. This thing they throw out rare. So notice so far, Apurva has managed to throw out uncommon, rare, much less often. None of these are actually scientific terms. Scientific terms have numbers, you know, so at any rate, this is all propaganda. This is how propaganda works, working very hard to say, you know, it was complicated. Good people did their best. Mostly they feel like they did a good job, dropped the ball here and there maybe, but it was all rare and a little bit uncommon. And there's just a couple of people that are anecdotes, but we can't be sure that this is what actually happened to them. Renee France, 49, a physical therapist in Seattle, developed Bell's palsy, a form of facial paralysis, usually temporary, and a dramatic rash. But Dr. France said doctors were dismissive of any connection to the COVID vaccine. The rash, a bout of shingles, debilitated her for 3 weeks. So Dr. France reported it to federal databases twice. And guess what? I thought for sure someone would reach out, she said, but no one ever did. All right, so that happens too. And this wasn't like a little bit of a failure. They comprehensively wanted to get these shots into people and didn't want anybody asking questions and didn't want anything contributing to vaccine hesitancy. But guess what? People have figured it out all on their own. If you look at the actual vaccine uptake for boosters, the data right now, no good. If you look at Moderna's latest profit warnings, well, they just lost $1 billion and probably continue to lose money because it's a big giant organization without a product to sell because nobody wants it anymore, right? People already figured it out on their own. Federal agencies are not. Apurva Mandavili's completely horrid reporting on this or not. People already figured it out. Now, question is, why is this article coming out though? And my best guess is it's an election year and finally some people in power have figured out that killing and wounding the people you want to vote for you doesn't track well. It doesn't poll real good. Maybe they figured that out. Maybe they ran a focus group like, hey, we continue to insist that you should get these shots that you've already figured out harmed your aunt and killed your uncle. And we're thinking, how do you feel about that? Oh, you don't like that? Well, maybe we should start backtracking. Let's start trickle truthing this. Cause you know, we couldn't just come out with the truth. So we're going to trickle truth this. We'll come out a little bit and a little bit more. And we'll just decide how much steam can we let out of this pressure cooker so it doesn't blow. And then we'll back up and then we'll go back to our usual gaslighting and lies. Cause that's what this whole thing is about. Just an absolute run of gaslighting and lies. So look, we're all the way down here and we haven't even seen anything until finally we get down to, I don't know how many paragraphs deep we are, but the CDC also links mRNA vaccines made by Pfizer BioNTech and Moderna to heart inflammation or myocarditis. Actually, it's way more than that. It sort of links it to, you know, especially to boys and young men. Okay, Apoorva, this is your chance to say, why are we even giving these vaccines to boys and young men? Why is it still in the, this would be a great thing, yeah, not do your job for you, but you go to the CDC. Hey, Mandy, who's head of the CDC now, or Rochelle Walensky, see if you can get her on record and say, why are you still recommending that we give this shot in the Omicron era to boys and young men when it risks life-altering, permanent, no such thing as mild myocarditis, at least finally they had to drop that word. I don't see mild in here. But it's very bad. It's permanent. It's life-altering. In some cases, it leads to death or a shortened life. This is pretty bad. Why would we be doing this to young men and boys who have zero risk? Like, as close to zero as you can possibly get, not from COVID, as if it's a thing, COVID, but from the circulating strain of COVID out there, which we have right now. It's simple logic. It's simple cost-benefit. It's the simplest of all possible things to rationally deduce through this whole thing. And it's a question that should be asked, but it goes unasked in this amazing year, took a year to write article in here. Okay, so agency scientists, quote, say here, are monitoring large databases containing medical information on millions of Americans for patterns that might suggest a hitherto unknown side effect of vaccination, said Dr. Dimitra Deskalakis, director of the CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. We toe the line by reporting the signals we think are real signals and reporting them as soon as we identify them as signals. He said the agency systems for monitoring vaccine safety are pretty close to ideal. Oh, boy. You know, you really haven't been gaslit until Dr. Dimitri Deskalakis has thrown that sort of wiffle ball at you. Pretty close to ideal. Get the F out of here, dude. That is shameful. I shouldn't have to read that. And if I do, it should be challenged immediately. Apoorva, you could have found somebody who could have told you that our monitoring is actually very far from ideal. In fact, it is designed to be substandard. In fact, it is designed not to find signals. It's like three blind mice, you know, encoded in a software package. It's just astonishingly bad at what it does. They have no interest in figuring out real signals because that's not the game. That's not where the incentives are. This isn't hard to understand. The incentives are all misaligned in the system. All right. Those national surveillance efforts include the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS. It is the largest database, but also the least reliable. Reports of side effects can be submitted by anyone and are not vetted, so they may be subject to bias or manipulation. Oh, yeah, you know, people just take the time to hand-enter these awful, you know, 30, 40 minutes to get through this cumbersome, poorly designed user interface disaster of a system that may just, you know, burp on you and lose all of your inputted stuff. And throw it into that, and then nobody's ever going to call you or collate it properly. And then people are going to have to do FOIA requests to try and claw that data back out, our public data, to see if they can make sense of it. So believe me, I've been tracking this thing the whole way through. And again, want to see the propaganda here? The system contains roughly 1 million reports regarding COVID vaccination. And by the way, that would be the tip of the iceberg because not all things get reported. And the vast majority are for mild events. Okay, vast majority, mild, not terms. How many were not? How many were not mild events? Was it 10, 12, 38, 422,000? It's a number, right? But at any rate, we don't have science yet here running in the New York Times because, of course, they're amazing editorial standards. Somehow that slipped past their amazing editorial standards here. The federal researchers also combed through databases that combine electronic health records and insurance claims on tens of millions of Americans. So if they had gone through those insurance claims, they could have also noted that the life insurance companies had noted 10, 12 sigma events, one in a billion year events for deaths happening beginning in 2021. Coincident with the vaccination policies and outreach with those programs, We would have noted that if you had just combed those insurance claims, life insurance claims in particular, you would have found something. And of course, Ed Dowd found that, and we saw the heads of these CEOs of these insurance companies coming out and saying that they had found those things, or mortuary people finding weird things. We had the blood clots. We have doctors reporting weird things. We have emergency room technicians reporting, you know, being slammed with certain things. We have oncologists reporting complete shifts in patterns. We have emergency services people, ambulance drivers reporting vastly chaotic things. But somehow federal researchers couldn't find it after combing through big databases and all of this. But there are gaps. Some experts noted, writes Apoorva, which is just code speak for really sloppy reporting. This is awful. The COVID shots administered at max vaccination sites were not recorded in insurance claims databases, for example. Oh, we were just missing some data. If we missed anything, it's because we didn't have enough prying insight into your actual lives. We couldn't have possibly deduced a problem from like call center data at ambulance companies or emergency rooms, visits by people who shouldn't be there. So this poor guy really got hit. And they did note here that the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, linked Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to facial paralysis. Oh, well, maybe you could have talked to Justin Bieber. He'll tell you all about that too. You know, it happened. Tingling sensations and numbness. The EMA also counts tinnitus as a side effect of J&J's vaccine, although American health agencies do not. But there are more than, here's a number finally, 17,000 reports of tinnitus following COVID vaccination in VAERS. Are the two linked? It's not clear. It's not clear. Of course it's not clear, Apoorva. Nobody followed up on it. Just how it is. So this is, I just wanted to get that to you there. We're going to talk about that. But that's all I have here for you today out in public. I'm going to now switch over to carrying on my scouting report for my subscribers back at Peak Prosperity. So all of you who are subscribers, follow me back over to Peak Prosperity. We will continue this conversation. For everybody else, hey, see you next time. Common knowledge is here. We're finally talking about it, even though they are doing their level best to minimize, gaslight, let a little bit of steam out, and otherwise trickle truth us as if they think we're morons, which of course they do. So with that, thanks very much. We'll see you next time. Please consider coming by Peak Prosperity if you like this kind of reporting. Well, I'm there all week long. See you next time. Bye. There is a war on food going on right now, and we're going to have to take a look at that right away. It is getting important. By the way, you should probably plant a garden. I'll tell you why in just a second. Hi, I'm Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity. This is a scouting report for those of you who aren't familiar with my scouting reports, because maybe you're new to Peak Prosperity or you're watching this out in public. I spend 7 days a week figuring out what's going on in the world, and at least 3 days a week, I am capturing my scouting findings for all of my followers. And so some of that goes out into the public, but most of that is back at Peak Prosperity for my subscribers who like to save time and know what's going on in the world. And trust me, to be an impartial arbiter and finder of what's going on. Today, let's talk about this part here. Let me pull this up now, because this is really rather astonishing to me that we are actually in this place at all. Food wars. Whoops, make this full size. Food wars and climate change. Let's look at this right now. So this just came out in Yahoo News a couple days ago. It said farmers warn food aisles will soon be empty because of crushing conditions. We are not in a good position. There's the link down there. And this is really fascinating. So this applies to the UK, and apparently the UK, quote, is facing a dire food shortage, forcing prices to skyrocket, and experts predict this is only the beginning. Which experts? As you know, we're a little suspicious of experts these days, post-COVID and everything. According to a report by The Guardian, extreme weather is wreaking havoc on crops across the region. England experienced more rainfall during the past 18 months than it has over any 18-month period since record-keeping began in 1836, so that's a pretty long run, wouldn't you say? Carrying on, quote, because the rain hasn't stopped, many farmers have been unable to get crops such as potatoes, carrots, and wheat into the ground, okay, or out of the ground, because sometimes you leave the carrots and turnips, things like that, over the winter. Quote, farmers have also planted fewer potatoes, opting for less weather-dependent and financially secure crops. At the same time, many of the potatoes that have been planted are rotting in the ground. So having a little domestic food trouble here, producing it, and what is the problem, what is the cause, and what are the solutions? This is the interesting part. English farmers aren't alone, they go on to note in this article. People are struggling to grow crops worldwide because of what they're calling extreme weather. They've got dry weather in Brazil, heavy rain in Vietnam, etc., severe drought in Spain and Morocco, extra snowfall and rain in California. At any rate, they're saying, gosh, tough to cultivate olives for olive oil. Peru's blueberry yields cut in half this year. Compared to last year, coffee, beer, wine, all have been impacted by extreme weather. So this is actually potentially a thing, or more likely, this is what happens any year. You look around, some areas are having good conditions for growing and some are having bad conditions for growing. So is it really a problem that we're having trouble with blueberries, coffee, and wine? Well, for some people, that would be a huge catastrophe. But it feels a little bit like cherry picking. So look at this down in yellow again, second part in yellow over there. Quote, according to an ABC News report, the strain on the agriculture industry will likely continue to cause food prices to soar, end quote. Actually, you know what's going to cause food prices to soar? Federal Reserve money printing and federal government fiscal deficits. That's called inflation. Here they're talking about demand supply shocks. So if we have less supply and the demand is still there, price will go up, obviously, because price is a function of supply and demand. But actually, prices have been going up because of inflation due to monetary effects. So I just want to make sure we're clear about that. This article doesn't say, oh, food prices have been going up because of money printing. They are saying quite clearly, well, according to ABC News report, and of course, ABC News is your ultimate arbiter on why food prices might be going up, obviously. Don't need to fact check that one. End sarcasm. Carrying on, if these were just isolated events, farmers could more easily adapt. The problem is rising temperatures are directly linked to the increasing amount of gases such as carbon dioxide and methane in the atmosphere. Rising temperatures are directly linked, they say. A little bit less clear. Potentially. So, but let's leave that for what it is. What's not clear is that the rising temperatures are directly linked to the blueberry and coffee problems that we're seeing around the world, or if those are just ordinary things. We don't know, right? But you can see the spin on this whole thing. And rising carbon dioxide in rising temperatures, I hate to tell you this, those are actually good for plants. Plants like more carbon dioxide. This is just a fact. This is why greenhouses, industrial greenhouses with a trapped environment, pump carbon dioxide into them specifically to foster more vigorous plant growth. And as well, I can tell you this, my plants like warmer versus colder temperatures to a point, right? All right. But let me go to, missed that one part. So they go on in this article to talk about how, well, this is all due to climate change, and we have a big problem going on here. And let's pull this up, because this is actually fascinating to watch how this goes. So let me grab this link right here, and we're going to go to this article now, because it's phenomenal to watch what they've been doing here and how they're linking this all to the stuff you've been hearing about, which includes climate change and the idea that you need to eat less meat. All right. So here's that article talking about farmers warning about food aisles being empty and things like that. Now let's go down here and find out. Ah, yes. Since the start of the Industrial Revolution, it says here, humans have burned dirty energy sources such as coal, oil, and gas, which release a significant amount of those gases. Dirty energy sources, as if carbon dioxide is a dirty thing. Look at the language. This is nudging. This is how they do it. Honestly, carbon dioxide is a necessary component. If we could get all the carbon dioxide out of our atmosphere, would that be a good thing or a bad thing? It would be a bad thing. it would lead to the end of all plant life as we know it. That would be a bad thing. So how we characterize that as dirty or not is really a relative argument that needs to be made. And saying here, as climate change worsens, the threat to our food supply chains, both at home and overseas, will grow, according to Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit analyst Amber Sawyer. Fortunately, we know many ways that we can make the food system more resilient while reducing food emissions. The biggest opportunity, they say here, is high income nations is a reduction in meat consumption and exploration of more plants in our diet, says Dr. Paul Barons, Associate Professor of Environmental Change at Leiden University in the Netherlands. More plant-based stuff. Now, which plants would those be exactly, Paul? Because curious minds have a lot of questions that we are going to ask about this. First up, I hope it's not fruits and vegetables, because those are hideously expensive. Most people cannot find the way to afford those right now. That is a problem. And when they say also, hey, we're going to eat more plants and less meat, let me remind Mr. Expert over here about this fact, which is that a lot of pasture land isn't suitable for veggies or grain productions or plant growth that we could eat. Here's two examples. You got highland, rocky, hilly sort of territory. You're not dipping a plow in that and getting corn to come out anytime soon. The other would be more dry land, grass range, and that also is not suitable for fruit and veggies. So this is actually one of the highest best uses for grasslands, of course, is to have large herds on them. They like it. It's good for the pasture land. It's good for the pasture-raised animals that are on there. It's good for everybody. So this idea that meat is just like, oh, it's either competing with fruits and veggies or not, is absolutely cartoonish. And you could only really get that broken point of view from a professor who's never actually done any of this kind of activity in their life as well. Remember, it was in 2016, which, let me get my little drawn tool out here. Remember this from 2016, November 2016, World Economic Forum had 8 predictions for the world. Number one was you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, number four was you'll eat less meat. And they said, oh, it's an occasional treat, not a staple. Good for the environment and our health. Bad health comes from eating meat. Good health comes from eating things like, I don't know, corn syrup, I guess. I don't know. Very bizarre. But obviously, they want us to eat less meat for reasons that are as yet undisclosed. So we don't know what those are, but the pressure is on. I'm going to have a full report this coming week, later in the week, about what's going on with the H5N1 threat that's hit the dairy herds, in particular in the United States of late. We're going to be talking about all the different threats to our food environment. But we saw back, when this first came out over the years, they tried to get us to eat less cows because cows are cute. So they tried personalizing them. They did the whole PETA thing. Remember PETA? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That was a big thing once. And if you heard about them lately, that didn't quite work out. So then they tried to convince us that these cows are farting. And so that's why they wanted to cull 200,000 cows out of the Irish herds, because climate change, while mysteriously never mentioning China's coal-fired power plants that are getting built week after week, somehow it's Irish cows. That's not really working out. Now we're going for this idea that, generally speaking, we need the land that the cows are on to grow fruits and vegetables, because that's good for the environment and good for your health. Again, unclear why they're going that direction. Now, if you really wanted people to grow more corn, for instance, or we wanted to do alternative energy, things like solar, wind, things like that, so that we could combat climate change, which is what they're directly linking all this to. It's climate change. For the climate, we need to have less cows and more fruits and veggies, I guess. If we're going to do that, then it would probably be a good idea to remind somebody over there in the financialization trading pits, this is corn prices in the futures market going back to 2008. The blue dotted line connects today with 2008 and shows that the price of corn, while wobbling around, has gone absolutely nowhere since 2008. Think about any other business charging exactly what they charged in 2008, and you'll understand why this is a really squeezed industry. If you want more fruits and veggies, then you probably ought to allow the price to go up, but they don't, because the raccoons in charge of Wall Street who are in there, they like the price of commodities smashed all the way down to the price point where the commodities producers are barely surviving. 2-3% margins, right? The same, literally the same nominal price of corn that's in your box of cornflakes is being given to the producers today, as in 2008, right? Way over there, 2008, as same as today. Okay, that assures that we're not actually getting a lot more production out. And by the way, when you have zero extra margin in your business, you know what happens? You have to run the leanest possible shop you can. You can't do the right things like let your soils let lie fallow for every, you know, once every 7 years, as it says we should do, right in the Bible. It's encoded in there as human instructions of wisdom. Maybe we should let our soils rest now and then for the health of the soils, which gives us better, more nutrient dense, better foods in the future. But you can't afford to do that when you're operating on a 2%, 3% margin. Obviously, a box of cornflakes does not cost today as it cost back in 2008. It costs a multiple, 2x, 3x more. But for the farmers, they're getting exactly 0x more between back then and today, even though all their costs have gone up, right? You know, property taxes have gone up through the roof through this period of time. Fuel costs have gone up. Fertilizer costs have gone up. Seed costs have gone up. Labor costs have gone up. Everything has gone up except the price they receive for their commodity. So pro tip to all these university professors out there thinking, oh, we just need people eating more fruits and veggies. You will get more and better, not just calories, but nutrient density if we could incentivize the producers to get a little more taste out of the situation, but they're not getting that taste. How about for wheat? Same thing, except they're getting less today than they were getting in 2008 by a pretty wide margin. So not getting more wheat, not getting more corn, and don't even get me started on the cost of vegetables. If you've been shopping, you know, suggesting that people should eat less meat and more veggies is a really stupid thing to do unless those people happen to be rich, let alone wanting to eat organic stuff that's not sprayed with all manner of ridiculous glyphosate and neonicotinoids and all the other pesticides and fumigants and fungicides that they happen to use now. In order to farm profitably today, you are forced into this pesticide, chemical, fungicide universe that's just awful for everybody. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for the world. It's bad for the people who consume the stuff. It's bad for the animals. It's not a good system. It's a really bad system, but they want to shove us down into that system. And that's what I'm objecting to here today in the way they phrase that article. Now, what's interesting is that we look at total global crop reserves. So some portion of reserve of crops are set aside in reserve. And so this is the percent, and you can see very, very low amounts here are actually held in reserve overall. These are tiny amounts. If that they say here percent, I'm not sure. I couldn't find if they labeled this chart correctly. If this is a percent, these are all fractions of a percent then. So if that's the case, one thing you can see for sure, though, is that the U.S. has decided on a percentage basis, it's going to keep less and less and less and less. And China's decided that it needs to keep more and more and more and more in reserve. It's a general trend. Makes sense because China's not a dummy in the story. Same thing when you look at the global stock, crop stock to use ratio. You see how much of the global stocks are in the world, excluding China, has been going down. And of course, China has also been sort of trending upward, so dragging the whole world up. That's interesting. Now, if you're in the UK, the other thing you got to worry about, of course, you're in Europe, which means that because your gas, natural gas production, sorry, consumption has been curtailed of the use of Russian pipeline gas, your Nord Stream pipelines got blown up by somebody, right? And you are now foreclosed upon importing cheap gas from Russia, and as well, the Groningen field in Holland is now closed down, and there are a lot of issues. So they have to import LNG. LNG is too expensive to make fertilizer from. So now they're importing fertilizer from Russia. Way to go there. I'm not sure you thought that one all the way through. What's interesting, though, is this is deindustrializing Europe very, very rapidly. So the UK farm issues, all of farming in Europe, you're going to be dependent on the rest of the world. If Europe, if you do not wake up to this and stop this process, you cannot be haranguing and harassing your farmers and telling them they're bad people and telling them that they have to take on enormous costs to reduce nitrogen emissions because you care as a bureaucratic administrative class about in Brussels about climate change, even though you all fly around and you have, you know, private homes and cars and jets and all that other stuff. Leaving that aside, it must be the farmers. Don't be stupid, Europe. Treat your farmers well. Give them a little more taste on the whole income value chain stream. Maybe just a little. You could double farmers' fees and receipts, and you wouldn't even barely notice it at the grocery store if you just dinged a few of the other middlemen along the way. You wouldn't even notice it at all. So deindustrialization of Europe is happening. This is a really big deal. And what's interesting in that Financial Times article, something I've never seen them do before, is they actually compared population on the y-axis here against the overall on time, looking at the administration of fertilizers, making the connection that there's some connection between humans and food. More food, you can support more people. And food is grown with the use of more fertilizers, in particular, nitrogenous fertilizers like ammonia and things like that. That's what you see in the top line. So that's pretty amazing that they've done that. So here's where I go with this. Listen, folks, you've heard me say it before, plant a garden. You're going to do this because you will have greater food security and you're going to have greater nutrient density because you're going to be careful about making sure that you have the right micronutrients landing back in your plant so that when you eat those veggies from your garden, not only do you have the satisfaction of that, but there'll be higher levels of magnesium and calcium and boron and sulfur and all the things you need in there because you've taken care to put those back into your garden. Or you got to find somebody who's doing the gardening locally to you, who's thinking this way and can talk this kind of language with you about that nutrient density. It's a very important concept. So plant a garden for your own security, but also for your own health. Evie and I, there she is, love of my life. We just got more cows just delivered today. So that's actually our farm. That's a picture taken from this morning. We got four of these little things. That's just one of them. And that's full size. These are dwarf cows. That's how big that they're. It's a little in the background, but they're tiny. They come up, you know, I can hold my arm out to my side and their shoulders are still below my hand. So if I just hold my arm out straight while I'm standing, that's awesome. But these things can take that greenery and turn it into cool stuff like butter, right? So making fats out of grasses, what an amazing miracle of chemistry is going on there. The sun comes down, makes the grass gets eaten by the cow. Next thing you know, you get butter. Couple steps in there I might have skipped. But at any rate, we're very happy to be doing this. And we do this because this is good for our land. It's good for our soil. We're walking the talk. I don't just say plant a garden like some internet guru who's saying things that they're not doing. I know how much work this is. And I know what the rewards are. I'm very eyes wide open about that. We also have chickens, and they're laying all different sort of spectrums of eggs because we got a variety of different breeds. And this is a Norwood sawmill. I got a sawmill. I call it Dr. Norwood. That's where I go for my afternoon therapy sessions when I can't stand what the WEF is up to anymore. Time to saw a log. Now, that raises an important point. It is really critical what your mental health is through all of this. If you're feeling fractured and isolated, if you're feeling alone with this kind of information, if you are feeling maybe even a little bit desperate or anxious about it, I want to invite you to our National Peak Prosperity Summit. It's going to be this year. It's going to be in New Hampshire, September 13th through the 15th. 15th is my birthday. It's going to be some fun stuff on that day. And it's being held at the lodge at Camp Robindale there on Lake Winnipesaukee up in New Hampshire. It's that weekend is an amazing weekend for leaves. Potentially they'll start to turn. So if you haven't been in New England for that time of year, wonderful thing. And, we have to limit this at just about 400 people. So, you know, because that's the size that we can feed and house everybody. And there is housing available here on site for people who want it, or there's nearby hotels. So we would love to have you there. And if you can come, it is going to be for your mental health. And we'll have lots of programs and interesting people and fun things to learn and great things. Come to that right there. If you go to that link down there, you will be able to read about all the wonderful things we're going to do and the benefits and the agenda and all of that. So we would love to have you there. That would be fantastic. And now I'm going to end this here, and I'm going to ask all my Peak Prosperity subscribers to follow me over to Peak Prosperity because I got a lot more to tell you about. Financially, the data that just came in this morning, as well as yesterday, looks like the recession is here. That's jobs data, that's housing data, a variety of things like that. So we got to look at that data because it's going to have huge impacts on where things go over the next few months. So with that, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed this and see you next time. Plant a garden. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.